Sony releases the major firmware update and then pulls it 12 hours later. Plus, we give our impressions on Ticket to Ride for the Xbox Live Arcade. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show week of July 6th, 2008. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Catalarm kind of that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005.
I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
They got Commodore 64s to land together and play a game with each other. Can you believe that? Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us here live on All Games Radio. Welcome. I want you to head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I'll be reading intelligent comments from chat throughout the night if you want to talk about anything that we're going to be talking about tonight or anything else gaming-related. A little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our phone lines and our Skype line. Our toll-free number is 1-866-880-0156, works in the United States and Canada. Or you can call us on Skype, which works worldwide, Bobby Blackwolf Show. All one word. We're going to have those open probably in about 30 minutes if you're listening to us on the podcast feed and you've come and joined us because of what you heard on Mostly ITP from the Georgia Podcast Network about Inside the Perimeter is what it stands for, guys. Don't get crazy on me. Two-part interview actually went up late last week with me talking about the show and talking about local Atlanta game development politics and stuff like that. All relating to games. You can email me, blackwolf@allgames.com. You don't have to be here live to contribute. You can either leave us a voicemail or leave me an email. So, yeah, actually, I wanted to talk about this. This actually came across Slashdot, which, unfortunately, there's no, like, accompanying news article with it. It was just, like, some guy who did this wrote Slashdot, and they put it up on the blurb. But essentially, apparently what this is saying is that the Cincinnati Commodore Computer Club 2008 Expo... That's a long term. I guess it's C4-2000. I don't know. There was a new game for the Commodore 64 called Net Racer came out. And essentially what this game allowed them to do was that they were able to have eight Commodore 64s with Ethernet cartridges, which have been made recently, have a LAN game together. You could always do kind of, there were like serial ports, so you could do two Commodores against each other, and also like using modems. I remember playing Dan Button's Modem Wars back in the day over a Commodore 64, playing over, and not really the internet. You just called the other modem. And then there was Q-Link, Quantum Link, which is what it was called, but it was basically, that was the precursor to America Online, was Q-Link. And I remember doing that and playing Club Caribe, which was my first graphical mush. Which is kind of like what your MMOs are today, but MUSH stood for Multi-User Shared Hallucination because there was no monsters to kill and everything. It was just a graphical chat room where you had an avatar. But now apparently they've gotten an Ethernet LAN of eight Commodores together playing NetRacer, and there is actually a page on NetRacer. Basically what it does is it uses UDP packets on port 3000. And actually at this expo, they actually had a server written in Java running on a PC, and that's what served out the game. And they basically did an eight-player LAN, so congratulations to them. The Commodore 64 is still kicking out there, and it's nice to see. You can download NetRacer. It does not work in the Vice emulator if you use Vice to run Commodore 64. You basically are going to need a Commodore 64 with an Ethernet adapter. And they've done a lot of stuff with Commodore 64s doing that. There was I think there's actually a web server out there that was run. It was actually linked in the comments of the Slashdot post, which then brought the computer down because everybody commented on it. Channel Z says, I miss the BBS days with ASCII art. I remember ASCII and ANSI, playing the old doors, the BBS doors, which were basically, they were door games, and a lot of them, they had turns. And you did all your turns for the day, and then at the end of the day, it switched over. You know, Trade Wars 2002 was one of my favorites. Legend of the Red Dragon was another one. Old BBS Doors that I loved playing. I actually liked another game. It was called Murder Motel, which wasn't as popular, but that was basically, it was, you know, one of those old Hitchcock motel type things, and you went around killing other players and you murdered them. And basically you were trying, you had enough, so many turns in a day to try to find somebody and then murder them. And basically you needed to hide where nobody would murder you and things like that. It was fun. I miss those kind of turn-based games where you can go in and you play for like 15 to 20 minutes, do all your turns, and then, you know, see how things go the next day. Those were the days. Game Guru says, so Commodore's online now. They're actually, it's been online. They've been able to do online stuff. I had a Telnet server, not a server, Telnet client, so I could actually go online and, you know, Telnet into like a shell, like a Linux shell or something from my Commodore 64. There have been things like that that have been out there for a while that have worked. And, you know, but people are still playing around with the Commodore 64. People are still making Atari 2600 games, too. So anything's possible. So now let's talk a little bit about current games. A game that I actually picked up on Xbox Live Arcade. As much as I have always kind of championed, you know, Xbox Live Arcade, I actually haven't bought that many games for Xbox Live Arcade in a long time. And I finally bought one based on the recommendation of one of my friends who's a big board game geek as well. He picked it up and said it was actually really good. It's called Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride, it's a board game about trains and connecting cities with trains. And essentially the object of the game is that you have to link up destinations with railroad tracks, and you're trying to link up these destinations against other players. And other players are also trying to link up destinations, and only one player can have a specific route between two cities. So it's basically, you know, who owns the route to that city, and you're trying to get these destination cards. So, you know, you pull a destination card, and then to fill out a route, you have to have a bunch of cards of the same color. And there are some cards that you can see, or you can just draw from the deck and not see what it is. And basically, you're just trying to get as many points until, you know, before you run out of trains. It sounds complicated, but it does seem a little daunting when you first play it, but it really is one of the simpler board games. I mean, I think, you know, Catan is actually a little bit more complicated than Ticket to Ride. And I like what they did on Xbox Live Arcade. It is a very good rendition. Now, I will be honest, I have not actually played the board game version. So when I say that it's a good rendition, I'm taking that from other people who have played not only the North American version of Ticket to Ride, but there's also several other expansions. There's Germany, there's Europe, there's Asia, there's a whole bunch of other expansions that they've played them, and they have told me that Ticket to Ride is good. So I'm going to take their word for it, but that is not me. I enjoy playing it. And I even played it online with Digital Firefly, one of the guys that helps us run the forums over here at All Games. And I won 2-1, which was out of luck. Luck of the cards, as they say. And it was fun to play. Now, one of the things that they did with Ticket to Ride, because I guess they looked at Carcassonne for the Xbox Live Arcade and saw how many people actually played it in the same room, where you could actually have in Carcassonne, you know, 3 people on the couch playing Carcassonne on the same TV. It didn't fall into the stigma of all multiplayer games have to be only online, you know, which is unfortunately happening now, is, you know, to play a game against a friend of yours, you got to tell him to go home and turn on his console, like Burnout Paradise. I'm looking at you. Anyway, you can actually play Ticket to Ride on the same screen. However, this destroys some of the strategy unless you have an agreement to not actually look at the screen when the other person's turn is up, because you can see their cards. And that totally changes any kind of strategy, because basically you are trying to the other player doesn't know what your destinations are and what cards you have in your hand, what colors. And if they know those, they can actually block you from achieving your destination, and if you have a destination that's not achieved by the end of the game, you lose points. So it's either you gain the points if you finish the destination, or you lose that same amount of points if you don't achieve it by the time one player's trains run out. So it changes the complete dynamics of the game. I applaud them for giving it a shot and trying it. They don't give any warning to say look away from the screen, so you basically you have to kind of have some kind of agreement with the person you're playing against if you're going to play on the same screen. But it's kind of questionable, and it's kind of hard for them to be able to do it. There's no other way they really could have done it. This is one of those games, okay? And this is unfortunately not something that Microsoft would be able to do. But this is one of those games that would be perfect for either on the PlayStation 3 for them to finally do something with the PSP with the remote play option or whatever, or the Wii doing it with the DS. Now, the GameCube started doing some of this kind of stuff with the Game Boy Advance. You could use your Game Boy Advance as your own screen and then play on the TV. And I loved those games, and everybody said it was a pointless gimmick. Well, I think something like Ticket to Ride or any of these kind of card or board games where you have to have cards you can't let other people see, this would be something that's perfect for something like, you know, having a PSP with you or having a DS or something like that to where you can hide some of the data and still play in the same room with people. And unfortunately, I don't think Microsoft can do this because unless they find a way to make the Zune some kind of second screen for the 360, which I don't see happening. But it'd be nice to be able to play against somebody and not tell them to go home to play it. Game Guru says, not with the Wii, although the Wii does need better online. See, that's the thing. People are going all the way back to online. I'm not talking about online play. When you're playing online against somebody else in Ticket to Ride and Xbox Live Arcade, you can't see the other guy's cards. It's perfectly fine. I'm talking about the offline multiplayer experience, which is growing more and more to be something people don't care about, or the people like in chat rooms and forums don't care about. They don't care if you can play on the same couch with somebody else. They only care about playing online. And that's kind of what I'm saying is, you know, this is not for an online thing. You know, this is something that would be, you know, this is a way for it to be played with people in the same room, not with people that are in different houses. Now, Joishi16 does say the poker with the PSP PS3 connection would be awesome. And I agree. You know, that would be. And now, granted, the roadblock you run in there is, you know, everybody has to have a $200 PSP to participate in the poker night. So it gets pretty expensive. That's a pretty expensive controller. And that's why everybody said the Game Boy Advance GameCube connectivity wouldn't work, because everybody would need to own a Game Boy Advance. And that was, you know, that was unfair. But the games that actually use that connectivity, mainly Pac-Man Versus, which only used one Game Boy Advance, that was one of the most fun party games I've played. And you can't get that experience on a 360. And you could possibly get that experience on a PS3, but they don't have any games that actually do that yet. Where you have basically Pac-Man Versus, if you never played it, you had three people with normal controllers, normal GameCube controllers. And they were the ghosts, and they were on the TV screen in kind of like a close-up 3D world of the Pac-Man board. And then one person was Pac-Man, and he played on a Game Boy Advance screen, which would give him basically the classic arcade look, you know, the 2D arcade look, and he could see the entire screen. And basically, the object was Pac-Man was trying to avoid the ghosts or eat all the ghosts and clear the board. And basically, there was a time limit. If a ghost ate Pac-Man, they switched. So basically, the ghost would then hand whoever was Pac-Man their GameCube controller, and then they would get the Game Boy Advance and then become Pac-Man and basically continue trying to clear the board and stuff. And it was basically a game of tag. And it was one of the most fun party games we had played in a long time. And I think that, you know, I wish there were more things like that. Now, granted, that's not a game you'd be able to play on. It wouldn't be as fun online because the gimmick wouldn't be there, if you want to call it a gimmick, of the Game Boy Advance screen. That was kind of what made it interesting. And if that was made like as an Xbox Live Arcade title where you could play it online, it wouldn't have the same magic, I don't think. Zappy says, if you're in the same room, just get the real board game because having real boards and cards is a lot better. And I agree with you to an extent on that. Mainly, Ticket to Ride had a lot of small pieces. And setting up the games and, you know, being able to... There's a lot of setup and tear down and counting and manual scoring involved, and it's a lot easier. I mean, it's mainly because people are probably lazy. It's a lot easier, especially Carcassonne, to play it on Xbox Live Arcade, mainly because Carcassonne's scoring is atrocious, especially when you get the farms involved. And it's much better to have the computer do it rather than trust and have three people trying to count and make sure that everything's right. Yeah. Joishi says, Legend of Zelda Four Swords was awesome. You could go to different parts and play on your Game Boy Advance. And that was another one that was actually kind of fun. You could jump into a pit, and then the pit would be on your Game Boy Advance. And it would be awesome. Sully907 kind of disagrees. He says, Four Swords was awesome despite that setup. That game would be much more functional as an online title. I guess I like the idea of jumping into your Game Boy Advance screen and doing things from there. So, Ticket to Ride, I would actually give it a B+. It's not perfect. It does kind of have that questionable decision on offline multiplayer. But the online was solid. I didn't get dropped from it, which is something that happens to me in Catan, unfortunately. And it is a good representation, from what I'm told by my board game friends. It's a very good representation of the game itself. The only downside I can think of that's why it's not an A is that there are a lot of other content packs and expansions that exist that they're going to sell to you. You only get 30 destination cards. You can only do the United States and three or four of the southern cities of Canada in this version that you get for that you pay 800 points for. There is like a German version, and then there's Asia, and I think there's a full Europe, and I think there's a full Canada expansion as well. And I don't know if everybody's going to have to purchase that, or if it's going to be like the Uno setup where only the host has to have the expansion. Like in Uno, only the host has to have the other decks for everybody else to use them. And when you start the game, you upload the deck to everybody else. So I don't know if everybody's going to be having to buy these, and then that's going to make it a $20 game. And by that point, it's probably cheaper to buy the board game version. But as a game, the functionality is good, and I like it. So some of the news. This actually happened last week, and I had actually forgotten to bring it up last week. But I wanted to kind of applaud Microsoft for this. The Content License Restoration Tool was launched last week. Basically, this is Microsoft's answer to all of the DRM problems. Now, the digital rights management on the Xbox 360, when you download content, be it you buy an Xbox Live Arcade game, you download expansion packs or, you know, things for Oblivion, Horse Armor, or television shows, they are tied to your Xbox Live account and the console you bought it on. Now, what would happen is, let's say your console red-ringed or had some other error and you got it replaced by Microsoft, your content would not be linked to your new console. It would only be linked to your old one, so you would have to be signed into Xbox Live to access that content. Now, what this basically meant is, let's say you bought Geometry Wars Galaxies when it came, or not Galaxies, Geometry Wars Retro Evolved. I'm getting all my Geometry Wars confused. Retro Evolved, you bought it at launch for the Xbox 360, and you loved it, and then your console red-ringed 6 or 8 months later. You got a console back, and everything's great. Okay, so you're going to play Retro Evolved, and you play it. Now, let's say Xbox Live is down for maintenance on a Tuesday, and you want to play Retro Evolved. You can't. And that's because the copy of Retro Evolved that you bought was tied to your original Xbox 360. So you couldn't play it when you weren't online, which meant if your internet was down, or if Xbox Live went down, then you lost. Then you couldn't play it. You could only play the demo version. Or if you were playing and your internet goes down or Xbox Live goes down and kicks you off for whatever reason, you get knocked back to the main menu. So this was a problem. And also it was a problem in places that had multiple people playing on the 360 and multiple accounts. You know, like in my house, my girlfriend has her own gamer tag and she loved Retro Evolved, but I was the one that bought it. And so when we got the new console, she could no longer play Retro Evolved unless I signed in on a separate controller. Now, back in the day, they did this thing called Points After Repair, where they would go through your account and say, okay, you bought this much stuff. Here are point cards. Here's codes for points. You need to create a new silver gamer tag on this console and rebuy all of that content, which was their original solution, and it took several weeks to do. Very cumbersome, had to fight for it, and then even then, they could only see a year back So if it had been longer than a year, they probably couldn't verify what you bought. Now they actually have worked out the DRM solution for this. Now, what this is basically doing, this is a tool that is on Xbox.com that allows you to consolidate all of your licenses to games, expansions, and TV shows, not movies, to one central Xbox 360. Now, if you go through the repair process through Microsoft's official repair center, they apparently do this for you. So they consolidate all your licenses for you to the refurbished Xbox 360 you get back from them. But this is more if you, say, decided that you wanted an Xbox 360 Elite. You wanted, you know, the console with the HDMI port. You maybe want to buy a console that has a new chipset in the hopes that it's not going to fail on you. This is the tool that you would use to consolidate all your stuff to that. Now, granted, there's some drawbacks. One, you can only use it every 12 months, which is not really a drawback to me because I kind of expected that. That's the way iTunes does it, kind of. You can deauthorize other computers once every 12 months. But, you know, if you use, like, your retailer plan, like if you buy it at Best Buy and get their warranty and then it breaks and you send it back to Best Buy and they give you a new one, you know, you better hope that doesn't happen over 12 months because you're probably not going to get it back. You can call and try. Another one is you actually have to re-download every title manually, even if it's on the same hard drive. Now, if you bought a whole bunch of stuff, that could take a long time because you can only set up 6 to download at a time with the background manager. And so you basically have to manually go through and re-download all of these titles to your Xbox 360. So, unfortunately, there was no other way that they could do it within their current system. Now, some people have actually really gotten upset over this, that they have to re-download all this stuff. But the reason that I'm not as upset about that, I mean, it is a downside, and it's one thing that people should know, it's because Microsoft had to work within the bounds of the Xbox 360 dashboard as it is currently. They couldn't really make any sweeping changes to the 360. And they really couldn't make any sweeping changes to Xbox Live, because they don't want to break other systems. They pretty much have to redesign everything around the new style of DRM to make it work better like this. So, some people are upset that they couldn't come up with a better solution, but I think this was the solution that was able to work breaking the least amount of other things. And that is a fine line, especially on a huge system like what Xbox Live is running on. That is a huge concern, and it's very difficult to do. So the fact they were able to do it at all without pushing a firmware update to you is remarkable, and I commend them for that. Prowler says, of course, you wouldn't need this tool if your 360 didn't die, and I disagree. This tool isn't made for people whose 360s died, and if they go through the Microsoft process, they're not going to need to use this tool. This tool is for people who want to upgrade their system. You know, the reason I did not buy an Xbox 360 Elite was because I wouldn't be able to have my content on there. This tool is really made for people who have bought new Xbox 360s. Now, yes, I know some people that have bought new Xbox 360s because they don't want to wait for Microsoft to repair their current one, or they're out of warranty, or what have you. But this tool isn't really designed for people who've had their 360s die on them. It's more for people because Microsoft has been making new configurations. And, you know, there's always the rumor of the new Blu-ray Xbox, you know, things like that. You know, going to other chips, you know, things like that. So this is more for people who want to upgrade and get a new Xbox. That's what this is mainly for. Because if you go through Microsoft's repair process, you're not going to use this tool. They're going to use it for you. Game Guru says Microsoft should just fix the Red Ring of Death. No, really? You don't say? Okay, so this week's big news was Sony. Now that we've kind of picked on Microsoft a little bit, Sony and their big, huge, amazing firmware that finally gives the gamers what they've been asking for from the beginning. Hooray, the 2.40 firmware. Firmware update came out, I believe, on Wednesday was the day that it came out. And what this basically gives you in-game cross-media bar, which basically means you hit the little PlayStation button and you automatically go into the same thing, the main menu of the PlayStation 3. So you can see your friends list. You can message, send text messages to your friends. You can look at photos if you really wanted to. You could, I think you could check the internet. I can't remember if you could do that or not. I couldn't in Folding at Home, but that's the only game I play. But it also gives trophies, and it enables trophies to be had. Right now, I think the only game that supports trophies is Super Stardust HD. Other games are going to support it in the future, but that was really the one game at launch. And I haven't been able to unlock any of the trophies. I got to the boss of the first planet, and he killed me, and that's about as, that didn't give me a trophy. That was so sad. So this gave trophies. This gave in-game cross-media bar. This was pretty much, you know, finally, you know, and I'm not going to make any jokes about, you know, Sony being late to the party. They did it, okay? They gave us the in-game messaging, in-game cross-media bar, and they did it pretty well, you know, because I have the 2.4 update on my PS3, and I think they did a good job of it with it. There's a little bit of slowdown, but, you know, hey, there's a little bit of slowdown on the 360 as well when you're trying to do some stuff. So it's there, and, you know, congrats to Sony for getting it out, and thank you to Sony for getting it out. That lasted about 12 hours. I know some other outlets are saying that it lasted 6 hours, but it really lasted 12 hours. What basically happened is that some people went on forums, internet forums, saying that after they update their PS3 to 2.4, when their systems were loading to the initial PlayStation Wave screen, and they were just basically simply hanging there, no icons, no controller functions, no nothing, just the wave across the middle of the screen. Basically, when you turn on your PS3 and it shows like the login functions and stuff, that's where they got stuck. Basically, it bricked their system. They couldn't do anything except watch that wave, which is a very nice high-definition wave and stuff. It looks really pretty. Even changes colors based on the time of day. But anyway, that's what happened to these people's PS3s. And it would happen on any type of system hardware configuration. 60 gig, 40 gig, 20 gig, 80 gig, all have been affected, although it apparently is a small number. Now, what some people have found, if they remove and reformat the hard drive, the little laptop-sized hard drive in their PS3, then they can actually get everything back. Or they can get their console back, but they've lost all their saved games, anything they've downloaded, all their accounts, everything like that. So, but that is actually a fix. So it's a software bug. It's not a hardware bug. And apparently, I think the repair is like $150. I'm reading this Kotaku blurb, which I'm going to explain why I'm reading a Kotaku blurb and what some people are saying about it. So what I think happened is that there's something in the install process of the 2.4 firmware update which has some kind of error that causes it to kind of fail, have the firmware update fail when certain conditions are met. And frankly, these conditions are met on a very small number of PS3s. I don't know anybody who has had a PS3 bricked with this update. Apparently, if you go to gaming forums, it's a very low number of people who have said that their PS3s have been affected by this. Apparently, you know, I've even read some people say that Kotaku overreacted and caused a mass panic when there was none. Now, the firmware has been pulled. Sony pulled the firmware. Some outlets are saying that they pulled it at 6 a.m., which is not the case. They actually, it went up at around 1 a.m. Eastern time on the day. I downloaded it at 1:30 in the afternoon, and I was able to get the 2.4 firmware update. I do know that it was pulled by 3:30 in the afternoon, but that gives us about 12 to 14 hours. So a lot of people had the chance to download this firmware update in the morning. And I don't think that everybody that was affected that got their console bricked visit gaming forums like PlayStation.com or NeoGAF or All Games or anything like that. So I think a lot of people were affected by this, but they're not the type of people that sit on gaming forums. And so they called into Sony's tech support call center to report this. And apparently Sony saw something. They did some investigation, saw something, and said, wow, we need to pull this off because we see this right here. We don't know how to fix it yet, but we need to pull it off. And that's what they did. So because some people are trying to tell me that Sony pulled this firmware as a precaution, which they wouldn't do it. This is their shining moment, their big firmware update that gives, you know, in-game cross-media bar. This was kind of the thing that would say, you know, hey, Sony, they've got it. They've finally gotten it. They would not pull it unless they saw something in the update, and which I think is actually in the install process, not in the firmware itself. I don't think they would have pulled it had that not been the case, had they not seen something. So, you know, people are sitting there telling me that they pulled it as a precautionary measure. No, they saw something. They had to have seen something. GameIndustry.biz did report later on that, you know, some users on PlayStation forums and elsewhere reported having issues. Sony said that they would be looking into the situation. They don't have an official statement yet, even as we speak on Sunday nights. It's still not back up. But they did have one kind of small statement saying that they were aware of a limited number of customers. So this was the statement from them right after this happened. Quote, in order to further assess the issue, we have temporarily taken the firmware update offline for further testing. We are working diligently to isolate the problem for those few consumers and to identify a solution before we put the firmware back up, unquote. So essentially what some people are saying is that Sony has no clue what's going on when they read that. They have no clue what's going on, but they took it off because three people called their call center. And that's kind of insulting to Sony, to me. Sony's QA department, I'm sure, you know, no QA department is perfect, obviously. We've seen a lot of bad things come through. But they would not pull this update if they didn't already have a good idea of what it was. Now, are they going to tell us, as in the gamers and the media, what that problem is? No, they're not going to tell us. But they wouldn't have pulled it if it was like three or four people total, and they wouldn't have pulled it if they didn't see something wrong. Because if it was just user error, there's no reason for them to pull it, and that would be a black eye on them. So, you know, this whole nonsense of, you know, we're all overreacting, there's absolutely nothing wrong, this is all user error, that's baloney. Because Sony wouldn't have pulled it if it was just user error. They saw something. They may not know exactly how to fix it yet, which is why it's not up yet, but they know where it is, what's going on, and hopefully by now they figured out how to reproduce it in a lab. Zaku Pilot says, I backed up my PlayStation 3 hard drive to an external hard drive. It saves your movies, music, PS3 game saves, and PSN ID info. It does not save your PS1 or 2 saves or your downloaded games. Wilcon says, I'm sure most people who install 2.40 have no problems, but I guess Sony didn't like the percentages that were bricking PS3s. We don't know their tolerance level, so it could be 5% or it could be 1% or even less. So I'm going to go ahead and take our quick music break, because I do know people want to call in about this, and then I will be taking your calls about all this and what your thoughts are on this, and if tell me if you got bricked by the PS3 update. I have not heard from anybody personally who has gotten bricked. My update works fine. Everybody else I know that have trophies, their update worked fine. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
You're listening to Bobby B. You know he'll probably be remembered in history as the greatest on MP3. Your chance to call up now, number in the U.S. toll free 1-866-880-0156 out at home. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype. Online you can hit. That's off the Trizak. Sit back. Bobby Blizak is Bizak.
Pen 15. He's a first-time caller, and he usually brings first-time caller goodness if I didn't got key. But that was his bumper. If you want to leave a bumper, just call Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype or send me an MP3 with your contribution. And I will play it on the air, and that way I won't have to repeat any of the previous ones. So I'm going to go ahead and open up our phone lines and our Skype line. Our phone line is 1-866-880-0156. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada. And our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, all one word. And you can call in and talk about the PlayStation 3 firmware. You can talk about the Xbox 360 DRM. Preferably, I'd like to not talk about what Itagaki should be doing next, although him doing a Rita Rabbit game probably would be kind of funny, but I think we have other things we can talk about rather than Itagaki. And one thing that we've been talking about during the break, usually when we do the music break, this week it was actually Chrono Trigger music, because we were celebrating the fact that Chrono Trigger DS was released or it was announced by Square Enix and is going to come out this holiday season. So we do have a call here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
What's up, Bobby? It's Rob D. I want to talk about Mega Man 9 a little bit since that news broke last week.
All right, Mega Man 9. Now, this is the side-scroller thing. What's up with this?
Yeah. Well, it was announced for WiiWare, obviously, and honestly, I'm a little bit frustrated that it's not based on some of the later Mega Mans. I like some of the less heralded Mega Mans, like Mega Man 7 and 8, you know, on the Super Nintendo and the PS1. And while I don't necessarily mind them going back to an NES game, I feel like I get the feeling that Capcom's going to be a little bit... I hope that Capcom doesn't actually be really lazy on this and just make this practically, you know, a fan hack of Mega Man 5 or Mega Man 6, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm really frustrated at the moment. The boss is decent, although I do think it's funny that they finally put a female Robot Master in there. It seems I'm not necessarily opposed to it, like I'm sure purists are on message boards. I think it's funny that it took them, you know, 20 games to get around to it after the X in the original series, but I don't know. I'd really hope they at least include the shop from some of the later Mega Man games or some new power-up or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to include any of the stuff from the X series because that's entirely separate series, and that's always been prone to more customization. But if it's just typical slide and charging Mega Man, you know, why even bother just making a new Mega Man 9 if we're not going to progress at all?
So basically, so you don't want them to go back to, you know, what everybody loved about Mega Man? Is that kind of what you're saying, or what?
I don't want it to be Mega Man 5 all over again. I don't want it to be essential what could have been released 15, 16 years ago. If it's just something for nostalgia's sake, that's all well and good. And frankly, I'll still play it because I do love those old side-scrollers. But mm-hmm. if it may as well have just come out 15 years ago, why are we even bothering? That's my logic.
Well, how many times, Rob, have we sit here and we talk about, you know, how great some of these old games were? And, you know, why, like, you know, even Sonic the Hedgehog, everybody's saying, oh, Sonic the Hedgehog started sucking when they went to 3D. Why can't they make a 2D game again, you know, that gives us kind of what we liked before? Why, you know, why do we say that, and then the minute Capcom actually says, okay, now we're going to make a game that, you know, is new game but uses, you know, a lot of the old graphical styles and everything like that, you know, why are we now kind of saying, no, don't do that? Isn't that what we've been asking?
Because, well, I think a lot of it is that we don't know about that much about what the game's going to be like at this point. But, yeah, I think people always say go back to it, but they kind of want to – they want the best of both worlds. They want it to be a 3D, you know, a 3D Sonic with the old 2D love somehow merged into the 3D game. And only a few series have actually managed to convert to 3D that well, obviously. I mean, and retain that feel. Super Mario is a good example. Speaking with Nintendo, Metroid's another good example. But I think that's a big thing. They want their cake, and they want to be able to eat it, too. I have no problem with them going back to the old graphical style. I just wish they'd taken it from a later Mega Man generation.
But, I mean, a lot of people, when they say what their favorite Mega Man was, a lot of them will say Mega Man 2, right?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have the bells and whistles of the later games. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's very true.
So, I mean, you know, they're trying to make something that, you know, would speak to people who's like, well, you know, I remember Mega Man 2, but, you know, I didn't like any of these later, you know, graphical styles and later games. You know, I want just more, you know, go right and conquer gameplay. And, you know, yeah, go right and conquer gameplay exists in 3D games. I know Ratchet and Clank is like that, where you basically, you know, you're not just going right. Sometimes you're going forward and conquering, or left and conquering, and up and conquering. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, would love to see a new game in that graphical style, especially since a lot of the times what I'll see is sometimes some games will actually have like an 8-bit version of the game somehow in it. Like the credits of one of the Katamari Damacy's comes to mind, where they had an 8-bit version. Everybody's like, oh, I love that. I would play that. Play more of that. And so that's kind of what they're going for. And I don't see why people are rallying against that, because it's people want to play 8-bit versions of games.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't mind it. I'm just kind of hoping that it's not going to be essentially Mega Man 2 all over again. As long as it's a new game, as long as they actually don't just make a horrible again, essentially fan hack of the game, I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. I hope they include something new. That'd be great if they actually try to take the shop, like I said, or even maybe some sort of new method of powering it up. As long as they don't include the mecha arm from Mega Man 5, mm-hmm. but on the Game Boy. But In my opinion, actually, Mega Man X8 was a good example of how to actually bring Mega Man into the new generation. I know not many people played that on the PS2, and it actually didn't garner very good reviews, but in my opinion, I got through all of that. I thought it was a great example of new graphics, new PS2 level graphics with the old Mega Man gameplay, and they kept the feel of the Mega Man X series. X7 was a horrible way to actually try to make Mega Man 3D, which I think that making Mega Man 3D is a bad idea to begin with. I don't think it's going to work, and I shouldn't say that because who knows, maybe they can do it right. But X8 was a good example of trying to keep to the old gameplay, keep to the old level design, and try to merge that into the modern generation. Why haven't we seen more, you know, Symphony of the Night style, although that's even old at this point, why haven't we seen more 2D gameplay with modern graphics? I don't understand why we still have this 3D stigma, why everything next gen has to be 3D.
Because for the same reason that you don't like the fact that they're going back to the 8-bit stuff, there are people that complain that they're going back to the 2D. And there's probably more of those, you know, kind of the younger generation that's so used to 3D that, you know, it just seems outdated to have something in 2D. And that's probably why. I mean, some companies have tried it. I think there was that Contra for the PlayStation 2 that was a 2D side-scroller. You know, Metal Slug continues to be a 2D side-scroller and, you know, games like that. But most people kind of, you know, a lot of the younger generation especially demand 3D just because that's what they grew up on. And 2D games are what their parents played. You see where I'm getting at here?
Yeah, I do. I just wish that more companies would be a little bit more open-minded and try to make a modern new game that's not just all nostalgia and try to use the graphical capabilities now to reenact some of that old gameplay.
And you know what? I bet you there's a lot of developers, companies that are developers, that would love to do that. Okay? Unfortunately, they're not the people that have the wallets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people in the wallets that say, oh, look at all this nostalgia. People are, you know, wearing T-shirts that say Know Your Roots and have an NES controller on them. You know, they're big sellers at Hot Topic. Let's make a game that looks like an NES game. Let's make a game that looks like an NES game and acts like an NES game. That will work. But if you try to make a game that has, you know, new graphics, that's a side-scroller, and you try to release it in retail, it's not going to work all that well. Now, I mean, Xbox Live Arcade, I know, has, you know, some side-scrollers, Cloning Clyde, games like that that are 2D side-scrollers with kind of modern graphics, but you don't see those in retail all that often.
And most of those feel like flash games. I have my own opinions about the Xbox Live Arcade, but that's not why I called it. Thanks for taking my call, Bobby. I'll let you get to another caller.
All right. Thank you very much, the Rob D. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. It's kind of funny. It's you've got a balance between the nostalgia of, you know, how far back you want to go for nostalgia. You know, 2D gameplay is nostalgia, but it's not nostalgia enough to the people who make the purchasing decisions and things like that. So we do have another caller on the line here, so I'm going to go ahead and take this. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Blade 3.
Blade
here to talk a little bit more about Mega Man.
All right.
And all this 8-bit stuff that's going on.
All right. So what's on your mind, Blade 3?
Well, I just wanted to say that what is this going to look like on a big screen TV?
Probably blocky. Which is
I play
NES games on my big screen TV, and yeah, it's probably going to look blocky and pixelated, which is probably what they're going for.
That's a big issue, but I still play my Nintendo 64 games. I mean, mm-hmm. I still love my Nintendo 64, even though that I know that's 32-bit, which has nothing to do with
right.
what we're talking about, really. But it's still a great system.
Okay,
all
so,
the games
so
were good.
Let me ask you this, and this is a serious question. I'm not trying to... Why is the pixelated 8-bit graphics an issue?
I don't care. You know?
You don't care about what?
I don't care that it's going to look that bad. It's
okay.
All about gameplay, really.
Okay.
Although, if it's so pixelated that everything's like giant squares, we're going to have another Flash Mario game on big screen TVs.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not that... I mean, some people kind of over-exaggerate it. I mean, I play NES games on my big screen TV, and I can see everything. And, you know, I mean, yeah, I can see the pixels, but they're not, you know, 10 stories tall. I mean, they're not... It's not that bad. Some people,
as long as you can navigate yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can navigate yourself. I mean, I, you know, played Mega Man 2 on my big screen TV, and it was just fine. So, you know, it's not as bad. Some people will just automatically say 8-bit graphics and boom, you know, oh, it's going to look horrible on a big screen. It really doesn't. I mean, you can definitely tell it's pixelated, but you can see what you're doing and you can navigate and, you know, it'll be fine in terms of that.
It's going to be good for our current generations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this will be a new experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they might like it, the 2D thing at least.
Yeah.
Because I still play Mortal Kombat, the original one on the Nintendo 64, or I'm sure there's probably one before that. Mm-hmm. But I love that 2D-ness.
Yeah, the Mortal Kombat's came out like in the arcades first, and then it was the Super Nintendo and Genesis versions. So, you know, little generation before the Nintendo 64. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the 2D gameplay, there's a lot to say about it, and like the strategies involved, you know, that you can't sidestep. That kind of changes a lot of the gameplay that a lot of younger generations haven't really been able to experience. How old are you? I'm just curious.
Pretty young. I would rather not disclose that information.
All right. What are you wearing? No, just kidding.
Bobby.
No, I'm kidding. Chris Hansen, leave my door, please. I don't want you here. Anyway, so what else did you want to say about it?
Mostly just, you know, that the 2D thing, I wouldn't be mad about that nearly as much about maybe possible bad graphics from the 8-bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and did you want to talk about something else, too?
Not really. I just wanted to call in and let you know my opinions.
All right. That's what it's all about.
Excellent show, Bobby.
Thank you very much for calling in, Blade 3.
See you later.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. Chris Hansen in chat says, Bobby, why don't you come over here and have a seat? Some people have started talking about Mortal Kombat versus DC Comics. I will be seeing it at E3. I do actually have an appointment with Midway to see Mortal Kombat versus DC. So I will be seeing what it's like and seeing if they're actually going to have fatalities, along with everybody else on the web. You'll probably know more about Mortal Kombat versus DC before I get to see it. Zaku Pilot says, any word on Fallout 3? I believe I do have an appointment with Bethesda as well. Bethesda are actually the ones that invited me to E3 in the first place. So so I hope that I will get to go see him. I think Lawrence Young from AGI is handling all that. So we are going to take one more call here. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Yo, it's Xenocore from a deployed location. How you doing, Bobby?
How you doing, Xenocore? What's on your mind?
Well, hopefully my audio isn't too bad. I'm in a bad hotel Wi-Fi, so...
It sounds good. I wouldn't have known if you hadn't told me.
Oh, awesome. All right, well, yeah, concerning... Is there any hint as to the graphics being redone for this for Mega Man 9 at all?
I don't know. I actually haven't really followed it all that much. I've just kind of skimmed it. So, I mean, I don't know, but I heard that they're trying to keep kind of like the 8-bit style.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I'll know more in a couple weeks, maybe.
Yeah, well, my main concern is the through all the Mega Man games, whether it's NT Warrior or whatever, they at least kept the same gameplay as mm-hmm. far as the way you go about controlling Mega Man and everything else, whether it's 2D or 3D. I think the only departure they really did was Mega Man Legends. I think chat's already alluded to that mm-hmm. Already in there. But the 3D version wasn't that bad. I think it's just because it went a completely different direction people weren't expecting is why that game might not have done as well. But they can pretty much do whatever they want to Mega Man and it's going to sell.
Right. So. I mean, people are going to buy Mega Man, and especially if they tout kind of a nostalgia factor. You know, people are going to say, I remember the old Mega Mans. They were great. I didn't like the recent ones, but I love the old ones. And it's a good ploy. It's a good marketing tool for them.
Especially if this one goes over well, they might do a HD project, such as what's happening with Bionic Commando with
right.
Rearmed.
Yeah, so. Bionic Commando and then Street Fighter 2 getting the HD remix treatment and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot of stuff like this. It's compromising with the suits, you know, kind of the people in the wallet, the venture capitalists and stuff like that. And, you know, if the developer says, you know, we got this cool idea, but in order to get this cool idea made, we have to make this other thing. To prove to them that, you know, that may be what this is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you actually saw it in movies. One of the things, one of the stories that a lot of people know in the movie industry is The Matrix. The Wachowski brothers wanted to make The Matrix, but nobody would do it. So they had to do another film, and I forget what it was called. I think Unbreakable, I think, was it. But they had to make that film to prove to the studios that they could make The Matrix. And that, you know, so they had to basically make another movie to say, hey, we know how to make movies, we know what we're doing, let us make our dream game, and dream movie, and that may be kind of what Capcom's doing. They're like, well, you know, we're going to do this so we can make our dream Mega Man game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I wish all the hope in the world that this project hopefully comes off without a hitch, and we get some more stuff that doesn't follow the NT Warrior line, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
All right, that's all I had, Bobby. So y'all take it easy.
Yep, thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
All right, bye.
So that is the last call that I will be taking tonight. Thanks for calling in, everybody. I do appreciate it. Coming up next here on All Games Radio is Orange Lounge Radio. Three people out in Sacramento, California, giving their take on a lot of the same news and giving their opinions, some of which are a little bit more forceful than my opinions and probably a little bit less long-winded. So we always check in with Sacramento to see if they're there. Sacramento, are you guys there?
Yes, we are here. Sorry about the echo. I have just ran to go get the door because we have yet another guest showing up here in studio. So we're very busy here tonight in Sacramento. It's going to be a fun night.
How many guests you guys got?
How many do we have? We have at least two in studio right now. We've got two more en route. We have one of our New York listeners all the way here from New York City, Rama.
Wow.
If you've ever listened to our show, he calls in all the time. He said, say hello to Bobby Blackwell for Rama. Do we have a mic for Rama?
I don't want to
say hello to Mr. Bobby Blackwell.
Hey, Bobby, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Ranma? Now we don't have to worry about you calling in, right?
Hey!
He won't be blocking the phone lines tonight. So you know when we have so many guests here in studio, we're going to have some game time. And tonight, OLR match game. And that'll be a live caller versus a chatter. So we're going to have a lot of fun with OLR match game tonight. But, Bobby, I wanted to address something because earlier in the show, you were touching a nerve, but in a good way, okay, reminding me about the old school days of BBS games. Because that's like where it all started for me. My internet addiction was on the old BBSs and the door games back in the day, like Legend of the Red Dragon, Trade Wars. I knew everything you were talking about. I even played that murder game that you were talking about. I know I played that at least once. And then there was another one, The Pit. I don't think you mentioned The Pit, but The Pit was awesome because after it was out for about a year, they had a graphical client that you could use for The Pit. So you could actually play that online. And your character, like in the ASCII version, your character was this little horseshoe, and you fought either other players or monsters in The Pit. And it was good times, good times.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that. And I know VGA Planets also had like a graphical client. That's why it was called VGA Planets. But that was another one that was kind of like a turn-based, and I think they even made like some kind of graphical client to play Trade Wars too. You can actually, if people are out there are interested, you can actually still play a lot of these door games. There are still BBSs that run over Telnet, which you have if you have Windows or anything. I mean, it's included in there, and you can actually play a lot of these old door games. There are still BBSs out there that run them. Just do a Google search on them. And you can enjoy.
I was just about to ask, whatever happened to that stuff? I mean, we don't really have anything like that anymore, and it's a damn shame. Like, I know there are still people that are really hardcore into, what do they call, MUDs?
Yeah.
Is that what they're, it's like that, like a BBS game, but it's like a role-playing game. I know there's still, like, hardcore communities for that.
Well, MUDs are basically text-based MMOs. I mean, basically, MMOs today are basically just graphical MUDs, because they were real-time. You actually could have multiple people on at once, unlike a BBS where only one person was connected at a time. You know, and it's actually EverQuest, the people who made DikuMud, one of the more popular MUD softwares, actually sued Variant Interactive because they believed that EverQuest actually took the DikuMud source code and built a graphical client, and that's what EverQuest was. That's how close it was. So,
I never heard that.
Yeah, so you know, basically, MUDs were are what MMOs are today, just text-based. And, you know, a lot of the BBS door games, they were designed so only one person would be playing it at a time, because a lot of the BBSs maybe only had one or two nodes. If you had two nodes, that meant you had two phone lines coming into two modems, and two people could be online at the same time. And that was a big thing to have real-time chatting with someone else.
Wow, I just remember back in the day using BBS systems as like a doorway to play Doom 2 through a BBS.
Yeah.
There used to be this local BBS here in Sac that would charge per minute for people to play Doom 2, and I bought like an hour's worth of time, and I had so much, as Loki would say, so much fun playing Doom 2 on the BBS. It was awesome. Those were the days.
Yeah, it was. I miss those days. And I mean, because BBSs, because they were all local, you know, if there was, you know, you were actually close and you had kind of a local relationship with the people too, you know, and if you were a part of something, you know, and you were able to make friends with a guy online and, you know, weren't worried that he was going to hurt you or anything, You know, you guys were local. You could actually go out and, you know, older people would go out and get beers together, you know.
I sold, like, four old Nintendo games, including Mega Man 2, my old school Nintendo games. I know I should never, and now looking back, I should never have parted with that stuff. But I was a kid. I wanted money. I sold four of my Nintendo games to a person I met on a BBS. I posted an ad on a BBS forum, and a guy, his parents had to drive him, and my parents had to drive me to meet up at this pizza place where I got, like, $40 for old games.
That's
which was
cool.
That was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
$40. I know. I know. I was a rich kid. Richie Rich. So the BBSs were awesome.
Yes, they were.
We need to set up an all games BBS at some point.
Yeah, I'll think about doing that because I know how they kind of do it.
Do you think there would be enough interest in that?
No.
I don't know. I'd play.
No, I don't think there'd be enough interest.
Fine, it'll just be you and me.
Yeah, it'll be the two of us.
The heck, everybody else.
Yeah.
All right, the Robin Bobby BBS. Listen to tonight's OLR. We're talking about a lot of different stories. Of course, we are, you know, have a lot of praise for the new Chrono Trigger yet, but I'm sure it's going to be very cool. In fact, Rise Prince has
next
studio.
Screenshots of it. It looks exactly the same.
Interesting. We're talking about that, talking about the new Burnout patch that's supposed to be adding flight to the game. That should be interesting. Whole lot more straight up on Orange Lounge Radio right after Bobby goes off here on All Games Radio. Or you can always check us out in the old podcast form, www.orangeloungeradio.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much, guys. Have a good show.
We will. Take care, Bobby.
So that is it for us. We are done. You can catch them at orangeloungeradio.com. If you can hear it, they were kind of cutting out a little bit. But we will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for our E3 preview. It'll be the night before I leave for E3. We will be live. I don't leave until Monday, which means, yes, I do miss the Microsoft conference, press conference, because it's while I'm in the air. I'm going to be in the air while the Microsoft press conference is going on. That sucks. But we will be here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, to talk a little bit about what we're kind of expecting at E3, what may happen, what may not happen, and any other news in the week. So you can catch us live and interact with the show directly. Feel free to leave a voicemail on any topic or a bumper for use on our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show. Or you can email me, blackwolf@allgames.com. And we also have forums over at allgames.com. It's on a new dedicated server. Should be screaming fast for you now. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. Chrisville 1724, DC Nate, Tedekin, the Rob D, Burning Paper Sun, Burr, Chris Hansen, he's coming for me, Footy Monster, Kitsune, Mako, Maximilian, Seymour Booty, Shadows Liar, THK, Tiger Claw, Toshin, Wyland, Ake Ripper, All Games, Alpha Kananagram, Amaze Satsuma, Binary 667, Boomy, Channel Z, Cedabria, DeBlueGuy, Derek H, Dig Dug, DJ Dark Knight, Engda 59, Fang, Firecube, Game Guru, Gaudi, GS68, Gunstar Silver, Hey Jude, Interlogic, Jillio, JP the Prodigy, Justin Same, Kasetsu, Kulex, Elfrost, Loonies, Mecha, Melted General, Necromoss, New Shiny CD, Purple Montage, Prowler, Punchy, Recon Elite, Sky, SSJ100 Matt, Stickaxe, Subzy, Sully907, TDB30, TM95, Visid, VXJSNXV, WhatUpG, Wilcon, Xenocore, Zaku Pilot, Zappy, and Zunderson. So that is it. We will be back next week. It's we're coming close to E3. I'm excited. I know a lot of people aren't, but I'm excited. And now I want to go play Trade Wars. Don't attack my ship. I'm in Sector 1. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.